Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 30th. However, this is not October 30th. As you might have seen on Twitter, we had some technical difficulties, and Jim and I actually sat down and recorded a show on Sunday night, late Sunday night, early Sunday morning. And because of that time, and because of my family situation, and because of technical difficulties, we weren't able to record, and suffice to say, I wasn't even going to do a show, but Jim actually, he's not with me now. He's probably still on his way home from, or maybe finally back home from Yokohama Stadium after Game 3 here on Tuesday night, but yeah, he was not able to join me tonight, but he picked up, he had a really good interview with Alex Ramirez, the skipper of the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars, and I really wanted to get that out to you guys. And so I'm sitting here in a very cold room, late night, early morning, and I want to get this out to you. So on this week's show, we've got a talk about Japan's Fall Classic and the end of the CLCS, and I'm going to talk about the draft, and we've got some high heat, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, so as you know, the Bay Stars made it through to the Japan Series, first time since 1998. They beat the Hiroshima Carp in the final round of the CLCS. Kind of surprising. They finally played that Game 4, and the one that had been rained out twice, and the Bay Stars won that, and then they kind of romped through Game 5. And so they went to Fukuoka the next day, and they traveled. And between that time and Game 2, Jim was able to grab Alex Ramirez and step aside with just the two of them and got that exclusive interview that, yeah, that Naija Gambare asked us to try to get. So we were able to get that, and Jim pulled him aside at Fukuoka Dome and spoke with him. Let's take a listen.
Oh, okay. Joe Whelan told me that you helped him with an adjustment he made to left-handed hitters who were hitting, who would get behind in the count, and he was throwing fastballs inside when he was ahead in the count, and these little lefties were flicking the ball down the left field line, and he said you helped him with an adjustment, he said, like, varying his approach.
Well, you know, at the beginning, one of the things about him is that, of course, Whelan's preparation is very unique. And when he prepares himself, and he makes the preparation about how he's gonna approach every hitter, is really good. But against the left-handed hitters, sometimes when he gets in that kind of situation, the difference between Japanese left-handed hitters and American left-handed hitters is a little bit different.
Right.
So he was facing Japanese left-handed hitters the same way American hitter.
Yeah.
So I kind of, told him the difference. Hey, you know, in this case with these guys, you may have to change a little bit, you know.
Okay.
So that was the advice that I gave him, and he was able to, change it quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. He had a huge difference against lefties first half, second half.
Yes. I mean,
like 300, 200.
Yes. I mean, it was huge. It was huge. And, he has such a good control and a strong and very strong mind. And whatever he does, his preparation, he uses it in the game. That is unbelievable.
Okay. Now, that's about the same time also you started using Mine a lot as a catcher. Now, John and I were both surprised because, you know, last year was Tobashita. Tobashita was easily number one, but this year you have no fear using, you know, Takajo or Mine or Tobashita in almost any situation. What was the key to those guys' development or your trust or...
Well, you know, looking at Tobashita last year's season and looking at him now, you know, I was expecting Toba to step up a little bit more, especially helping the pitchers in a good situation, in a bad situation. You know, that's when you really know, you know, as a catcher, how to help the pitchers. I think that Tobashita's last year's, the target was a little bit too high.
Okay.
You know, his target.
Okay.
And I was expecting him to change the target this year.
Okay.
But he kept the same target this year, very high target, especially after two strikes.
Okay.
So the pitchers were getting hit, especially after two strikes.
Okay.
But the difference between him and Mine has a very small target, the low target.
Okay.
You know, so of course they have different mentality,
mm-hmm.
but Mine's target is very low, and a lot of the pitchers feel comfortable with Mine.
Okay.
You know, then of course Takayo only catches once a week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so
yeah.
You know, also Takayo has a.
But you don't mind using them in big games.
Yeah, then. I don't mind using them because, you know, if Hamaguchi is gonna pitch, you know, Takayo is the catcher that make him want 10 games. So
okay.
I'm 100% with him that he's gonna catch a good game. He's gonna call a good game.
Okay.
So in that case, I'm not afraid to use all my guys. So that's why I was able to use all those guys. But Mine, you know, lately, I mean, the last 2 months, he has been unbelievable.
Okay.
You know, IQ-wise, communication with the pitchers, and the pitcher feel very comfortable with him.
Okay, now I'm going to go back to Joe a little bit. Now, obviously, he was, you know, he said, well, he thanked his teammates for being able to make that adjustment. You know, he said, I needed help. And he also said that when he came here, he was eager to play in Japan. He was eager to be a good teammate. Now, is that accurate?
I 100%. I mean, I think that Joe Willen has adjusted to Japanese way, you know, very, very, very much and quick. You know, of course, you know, I mean, there's still a little bit of American mentality of how the baseball has been playing here. But other than that, he has been adjusting to Japanese baseball very good. I think that he has a very good potential, and you know, when you look at him, I mean, he's an ace candidate. I mean, and I told him this before. You know, you are one of the best guys we have, the most consistent guy we have, and I really appreciate he's very professional as well.
Mm. Now, the other thing I want to ask you about the Climax Series plans. Obviously, the first surprise was seeing Shota Imanaga in relief in game four.
Yes. Well, we, you know, after they canceled the game, rained out game, I felt that you know, Willen, I didn't want to push Willen. I wanted Willen to stay there,
right.
and then because of the Hiroshima Carp was hitting pretty good against Imanaga, I felt that was the best timing for me to use him as a reliever. Instead of using him 4 or 5 innings, you know, short game, 2 innings, that would have been more effective for him. And, I mean, he did exactly what I was expecting, you know, from him.
And Hamaguchi also was another case where people on the internet are going, yeah. Like, oh, Hamaguchi's not so good. And I said, but no, he's not walking. When he gets in trouble is when he seems to not have a good location.
Yes, yes. That's one of those concerns about, you know, some of our, you know, coaching staff that, you know, of course, also my concern that, you know, sometimes he walks a lot of guys, but, you know, sometimes we got to get out of the box and you know, let the guy, you know, feel comfortable and do what he can do. And, I mean, he did a tremendous job as a reliever, 2 innings.
Okay. Now, the last one is, you know, you were talking about the players being nervous, and you've been here in the Japan Series. Do coaches and managers get nervous, too?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, this is my first year as a manager in a Nippon Series, and, of course, you know, we get nervous, and, you know, that's why I prepare myself. I try to prepare myself more, as much as I can. So, you know, I feel I can, okay, now I got something, you know. So, you know, that's what I did as a player. My preparation, I needed to prepare more, and then I became more confident. So that's what I'm doing now, preparing more as a Kanto group to become more confident and not get nervous in these kind of situations.
Obviously, your second year as a manager, and obviously the coaches, you got to have 100% confidence in not only the players, but the coaches.
Well, I strongly believe, you know, to be able to to be here, you cannot do it yourself. You know, I give a lot of credit to my coaches and stuff, and they've been doing a great job in how they relate their message to the players. You know, it has been an amazing year for us.
Yes, and congratulations on getting this far, and good luck.
Thank you very
good
much.
Good luck and good health.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, bud.
All right, well, Jim isn't here. Thank you very much, both of you guys, Jim, for getting us that interview, and Alex for taking the time to chat with him. Jim made a couple of points, but I don't remember what they were, except for the last one near the end. Alex talked about the fact that he actually is nervous. and that maybe some of the coaches might be nervous too. It's a new experience for Alex being a second year manager, but being in the Japan Series for the first time. But he's very, very calm and collected. I think he's a really good postseason in-game manager. He knows what he wants to do. He hopes that his players can work out the plan as he has it in his mind and on paper. But it doesn't always turn out that way, and you've got to be able to roll with the punches. And it seems like he's able to do that. What surprised me most about this chat was he was really able and willing to throw his catcher or slide his catcher, Yasutaka Tobashira, under the bus. Maybe not slide him under it per se, but certainly nudge him in the path of the bus, saying that he sets targets too high. I thought, and I've talked to about this before. I think a lot of longtime listeners have heard me say this, but when you talk to Alex Ramirez about hitting or about baseball in general, he doesn't just answer your questions. He really gives you information, gives you a lot of insight, educates you on what the players are thinking during those times, or at least how they approach. And so I always like talking to him. I think we had a question years back, who's your favorite foreign or maybe person in general to interview? And I remember mentioning Alex was one of the people I really enjoy talking to because of that fact that he gives you so much information. But in this case, he's willing to say, hey, look, I was expecting Tobashira to take a step forward. We wanted to see some progress, and we weren't seeing it. So now he's mixing in all his catchers and trying to find favorable situations to use the other guys. And that Mine has been really stepped up. He was a postseason hero for them last year. He really stepped up, and he's getting most of the starts, down the stretch and in the playoffs. So playing some really important games. And then the other point for me was how much it seems that he really respects Joe Whelan. It's evident and it's genuine, and I really hope Jose Lopez and Joe and Spencer Patton and the other import players really relish the fact that Alex appreciates them and allows them to grow as players in this environment. It really opens up and creates a nurturing environment, I think, for these guys to understand the Japanese game. And the differences and the nuances, and we got obviously a sample of that when he said, I noticed the way you were throwing to left-handed batters, and that you can't do that here in Japan. This is the way they're thinking, and this is their approach, and that obviously he got better. So let's go back and talk about the CLCS just quickly. Obviously we know what happened. It was 4-3 in Game 4 and then 9-3 in Game 5. But the Bay Stars obviously were playing Ramirez was managing the game much more like he was desperate. Jim, in our original show that wasn't recorded, said that he seemed to be the only manager who realized that this was a short series and that he was managing in the playoffs and in the postseason. I really liked his aggressiveness. A lot of people on Twitter, a lot of my followers, a lot of other people were talking about how aggressive he was, and that obviously helped them get through. But I think it kind of caught Koichi Ogata, the Hiroshima skipper, off guard. I think a couple of times I felt like, and obviously Ogata was trying not to show it, but that he had his jaw was dropping on some of the moves that Alex was making. And I liked the aggressiveness. I liked the fact that he brought in Shota Imanaga in relief. I thought it was an excellent idea. Yeah, a lot of things about the whole series was good, other than the fact that they had the rainouts the couple days, but that happens. I tweeted at one point, perhaps a dome stadium might be good, maybe a retractable roof, I think someone said. And that's all well and good. We just can't anticipate these things sometimes, but I think in those cases, especially when you've got a team that finishes higher and has an advantage, that if they don't finish the games, or if they don't play the games, or if one of them finishes in a tie, that team goes through, that there should be an alternative site. And I know Osaka and Hiroshima are far. It's very difficult for people to travel between those sites, and maybe attend the games. But if you got to get the games in, then I think Kyocera Dome would be a great alternative site if possible. Maybe there's some other dome stadium near there that's probably smaller, but that they can use to, you know, as an alternative to get the game in, so that you don't have this situation in which the higher placed teams, in this case, the second place team is going to go automatically over the, I'm sorry, the first place team is going to go automatically over the third place team, even though they have a one win advantage going into the series and they're playing all the games at home. So just some alternatives. Maybe MPB can think about something. Congratulations to Michael Westbay. He, you know, and I've always said this for a long time, that the Yokohama fans are some of the most loyal and loving and invested fans in Japan, because they really they support this team tremendously, even though it does a lot of losing. So even Michael Westbay, who's a longtime Baystar supporter, we were emailing back and forth or using SMS, and he said this was unexpected. And, you know, you know that you're cheering for your team and you're hoping for the best, but I don't think, you know, the expectations are there. I think it's more hope than expectation. And for this team to make it through and get to the Japan Series was awesome. So they get into the Japan Series, and game one was on Saturday night. It was a 10-1 win for the Hawks at Fukuoka. Pretty much a snooze fest. I think the Hawks jumped out to an early lead. Alfredo Despaigne double homer run in the first, and that was one of three hits for him. And then Yuki Yanagita had two hits and really ignited things. He was in the leadoff spot. And you put a guy like that, even though he just got back from an injured rib cage recently in the final round of the PLCS, you put a guy like that in the leadoff spot, and it really has to make a pitcher focus. And there's already not that many breaks in the top half of that lineup anyway. But to have a guy like that with so much power leading off and taking hellacious swings up there, you know, the Hawks jumped all over Shoichi, you know, and it wasn't right away. They ended up getting seven runs in the fifth inning, knocking him out and getting to Kenjiro Tanaka, lefty reliever. But it was just a case of pull out your pillows, because it just seemed to be over before it started. And certainly the euphoria that the Bay Stars had of winning and getting through to the Japan Series, they didn't have a lot of time to emotionally prepare for that game. So that sort of figured that was going to happen. Then we had game two on Sunday, and that was a 4-3 Hawks win. And there is a lot more to discuss here. Obviously, the Hawks get out to the early lead again. Despaigne again with a first inning RBI. But the Bay Stars finally get to now Higashihama in the sixth, and they get a solo blast from Takayuki Kajitani to tie it, and then Tashiro Miyazaki, the CL batting champ, cracks a two-run homer off Yuito Omori, and it's a three-run lead for DeNA. And you're starting to think this could be really, you know, we can have some drama like we had in the World Series in the States. But then Alex pulls Shota Imanaga, perhaps maybe a little bit early. Maybe he could have faced one more batter. But if you ask me, I thought it was a tad early, since he had been on a roll for a while. But, you know, Kenji Akashi was the left-handed batter who was starting, and probably they would have pinch hit for him, but you never know. Make him make the move and see what happens. And Tomoya Mikami comes on, and he allows a double to start the inning. And, you know, that just... then Yanagita comes up with an RBI single. Then there's an error. And errors happen. I mean, I saw some stuff about how bad an error it was. It really doesn't matter if it's a good error or a bad error. Errors happen. They're physical. You can't blame a guy for trying. If a guy doesn't give an effort, then maybe I would say something about it. But definitely those things happen. And then with the bases loaded, the big controversial hit was Akira Nakamura. He hits a single to right. Imamiya is trying to score from second on this hit. And the umpire at home in real live action called him out. And they went and they review here. They didn't have no time limits on their review. And it seemed like 10 minutes or maybe even more. And Alex was very cordial and diplomatic in his response, saying they looked at it for that long. They must have seen something. So we have to accept the result. You know, I don't think it was overturnable. There was not incontrovertible evidence that he was safe or out. So I would have left the call the same. It looked like he could have gotten in there, but we don't know if he did or not. You know, perhaps a fingernail on the plate. Who knows? These things are so hard. I just wouldn't have overturned it. MPB Reddit sent about a million and two angles and shots, video, everything that he could find on that play. And I just think there's nothing that shows for sure that he was safe or out. Really, really close play. It's a game of inches. I mean, I think these close plays happen in games all the time. And, you know, we have to think about the before time when there was no replay and that the umpire's call stood. And I think that's the way sometimes you need to leave it that way because, it's really hard. But I tell you this, it's a tough way to lose a game when you thought you had the guy out. But they didn't lose the game there. They lost the game before that, I thought, with letting the Hawks get the bases loaded. And they had their opportunities to come back. So it's just, it was a tough way to go out in that game for sure. And I'm sure the team went back and was thinking about it a lot. But there's nothing you can do about it. There's absolutely nothing you can do. You just got to play better and try to avoid that situation. A lot of people, I think, you know, one person I saw tweeted, they hope that's not the difference in the game, and that ended up being the difference in the game. But in my opinion, if there's a one-run game, there's always other opportunities that you had that you didn't get through. If it's a 10-run game, then I understand. You can't really argue with that. I guess it depends on what your feelings are. If you want to argue about it, if you want to call it a controversial play or not, I think it was a controversial call, but I don't think it cost them the game because there were a lot of things that led up to that. I did ask for fan predictions on the series and got a lot of responses back. NPB Card Guy, a longtime listener, said, at the risk of being called wishy-washy again, I'll be rooting for the Bay Stars, but I think the Hawks will win it in five. Coaster Freak, friend of the show, said Hawks in five. Bex said Hawks in five, but he would love to be wrong. Dragon Soul, who writes a blog about the Dragons, said Hawks. He said DNA is punching above its weight class. Hawks players and staff have been there and done that and produced the t-shirt. So he says Hawks in six. A person, I can't read the kanji, I'm assuming it was Ateji, which is just kanji put together and pronounced a certain way, but Yo-san, and he said DNA in seven. And our buddy Claudio in Toronto said he would love to see DNA win, but I'm going to go with the Hawks in six games. So the sentimental team, I think a lot of people pulling for the underdog Bay Stars, but and we realize that the Hawks are so much stronger than they are, and that is the way that goes. So this is on Tuesday after Game 3. The Hawks are up 3-0. So if it goes 5 games, that'll be nothing short of a minor miracle, and any time beyond that would be a major miracle. So let's talk about the draft now, making a four-seam transition. The Nippon Ham Fighters seem to have made a deal with the devil or something like that. They get high school slugger Kotaro Kiyomiya, the Babe Ruth lookalike, the jewel of the draft. Seven teams tried to select him. This was on Thursday last week, and that tied the record from 1995 when seven teams went for high schooler Kosuke Fukudome, who actually ended up going into the corporate leagues because he didn't want to join the team that selected him. And so a very pumped-up Masao Kida reacted as though he had just gotten the third out of a shutout or something. He's the one who drew the winning envelope for the Fighters at the draft. He was doing fist pumps and just looked like he had really done something great. And I'm thinking, well, you know, you would have. I could understand the fist pumps if you were the first person picking an envelope out of that box, but you were the third out of seven. So you did get lucky, but those other two guys, you know, had an opportunity before you got up there. So you didn't really do anything that great. But anyway, this team has gotten the likes of Sho Nakata, a big, at the time, he was the golden jewel in the draft. And they've got Yuki Saito, the handkerchief prince at the time. He was a big deal. Shohei Ohtani, They got him uncontested because he was intent on playing stateside, but they eventually convinced him to stay, so that was a coup on their part. Jim made light of the fact that nobody else picked him, but I said, well, yeah, but they did take a big risk there, and they made it pay off, and they ended up acquiring him. It doesn't matter how. That was my argument. He said it didn't jibe with the other guys because they were also picked by other teams here in Japan. But star after star, Yu Darvish, if you go way back about 10 years, is another guy they gotten in past or recent drafts. So star after star has been with the Fighters many years now, and I don't know how they keep coming up with the top pick or the jewel of the draft or the crown jewels, but they keep doing it. Now, of course, I hate this nutty system. It's not created for a competitive balance. It is. I don't even know what it does. It's crazy. But I can't complain about the location that Kiyomiya is going, because I said in the previous show I wanted him to go somewhere where he would be in a good environment and be able to develop as a player. And I think we've seen that the Fighters are able to develop their players. So in that respect, it's a good location for him, a good place for him to go. But I did want him to go to a team that probably needs some star quality. I heard one of the Japanese, a former Japanese player, say he wished that Kiyomiya would have gone to the Central League, because that league needs a star and needs a star batter. But they go where they go. I won't point that direction. And as Michael Westbay has often pointed out, when you elevate a unknown player to a level where they haven't been before, either, you know, it gives them an opportunity to step up and play and become a star. So hopefully we'll see some star power or star quality emerge from the Central League soon. I don't think Kiyomiya is going to have to play so much as a rookie. They still have Showtime Nakata, and he's going to be playing first base, and I think Kiyomiya can hone his skills, work on his defense, and work on himself physically. I think, from what I've seen, he moves fairly well, but I still don't think he's a great athlete, and I think he can work on that footwork a little bit more and just work on his body. And you know, he's still a teenager, so he needs to develop and mature physically, and once he does that, I think he'll be ready to go. So I don't want to see him playing too soon. That was one of the things that I was looking out for. Now, some notes about the draft. The Bay Stars took the most pitchers. They took five. The Giants selected just one pitcher, which is kind of strange. And then their third choice, it ended up being their third choice guy, Takuya Kuwahara, because they missed out on their second choice as well, as trying to get Kiyomiya. And then the Hiroshima Carp got the hometown kid, Shosei Nakamura. He's a catcher who's really athletic, and I think it's going to be fun to watch and see how he develops. I'm not sure. I believe they're going to keep him as a catcher, because in fact, we had a question about it in recent months. They see him as a power-hitting catcher. So I was thinking that he would get out from behind the plate and be an outfielder somewhere. But since he's with his hometown team in Hiroshima, and that team needs a catcher and somebody who can hit, I think it works out for him if he wants to continue catching. Oryx, the Buffaloes, won the rights to negotiate a contract with Daiki Tajima, a corporate league pitcher whom we mentioned was highly touted. And so we'll see how that develops. Remember, I really like a good organization, a place that has good organizational DNA, and I don't see that with the Oryx Buffaloes, but one of the longtime front office problems was let go. Yeah, it's Ryuzo Setoyama. He's parted company with Oryx, so maybe they can get someone in there who can help develop the young players. Has the vision for a team that needs to look forward in terms of developing young talent and creating a better atmosphere for players to improve, even on the top team. We don't see a lot of improvement sometimes on that top team. So anyway, and then on Monday, just a quick note, and we'll talk about it probably over the weekend when we do our next show. Jim and I do the next show together. But We had a question, I believe it was from Coaster Freak, about who would win the Sawamura Award. Would it be Yusei Kikuchi or would it be Tomoyuki Sugano of the Giants? And I honestly thought Kikuchi was going to have a really good chance to win it, but the announcement came out and on Monday and Sugano was the winner. I don't know. I said because he's a Giant. Jason Koskri tweeted back that, you know, he really looked at the numbers closely and Sugano was the better choice. So hopefully we can have Jason on here sometime during the off season and we can talk about that. I know he's covering the Japan series too, so he's busy after each game. But maybe somewhere soon we can have him in and we can discuss it. And that's it. Let's go to the fielding questions. All right, so Max in Los Angeles said, who do you think will hit more home runs in NPB, the Fighters, Kotaro, Kiyomiya, or the Eagles, Masaki Iwami? Hashtag high heat. And Jim said he thought it would be Iwami in the long run because Kiyomiya wants to play in the States at some point, and he probably will be good enough to go. Because all the reports that he has heard from evaluators and others are that this kid really can hit. And he just needs a little bit of development and he will be worthy of, he'll be big, major league worthy. I'm not convinced. Neither one of these guys has the physical attributes that make you say, wow, this guy is going to be able to play in the major leagues. They're going to have to work on their physiques. But I'm going to say Kiyomiya because I'm not convinced yet that he's major league material. He's going to have to show me here. I heard the same things about Sho Nakata as he was coming out and becoming a professional. And it took him a long time. It took him a while to get to the top team. And he hasn't been a dominant player on the top team. And I don't think I'll ever see him in the major leagues. So. But one of these guys probably is going to be major league worthy. I just don't know which one it is. But I'm going to say Kiyomiya is going to hit the most home runs in NPB. The one thing about it, though, for me is Kiyomiya is going to be playing at Sapporo Dome a lot. And in the Pacific League, there are so many really good pitchers, a lot of power pitchers, and the Dome is spacious. And even Iwami playing at Kobo Park Miyagi, that place is small and very quaint, but the ball doesn't carry there so well. So it's going to be hard for him to hit home runs as well. And when is he going to come up and where is he going to play? And I think there's a lot of questions around that. So it's going to be an interesting competition to watch. But I'm hoping that Kiyomiya becomes the new Nippon Hammer. And I'll be rooting for him for sure. But the crystal ball, Max, I don't know, man. After all this time listening to me get most of the predictions wrong here in the off season, you know not to trust me, right? We're all, you know, if you even listen to some of the other professionals and the other pundits out there, you know, we're all at the mercy of some umpire's call sometimes or some kid's head, you know, where he's at, if he's really focused or if he's thinking about other things or if there's something you know, tugging at his heartstrings or whatever. You never know what's going on in these players' heads. But, yeah, the crystal ball is probably out at the shop. I haven't seen my crystal ball in a while. Let's put it that way. But I would hope that Kiyomiya is the guy because there's been so much hype about him. But, I like the Eagles, and I would love to see Iwami do well as well. But, all right, so again, apologies for the delayed in this short and sweet version of JBW this week. Hopefully we won't have any more technical difficulties going forward, but apologies for the delay. Thanks for hanging in there. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your postseason if it's still going. If not, enjoy your offseason.